Hello, and welcome to IEP Essentials Pro Tips Podcast, brought to you by Learning Essentials. Learning Essentials offers special education-based tutoring in your home by state-certified educators with advanced degrees in all areas of special education. IEP Essentials Pro Tips Podcast brings professionals together to educate and empower families navigating special education needs in the IEP process.
Welcome to Pro Tips Podcast. I am your host, Wendy Taylor, and I cannot wait to have this conversation with Elaine Taylor Klaus. I am so excited. She has a new book out, chocked full of information to support families and professionals working with kids, complex kids with ADHD, anxiety, and more. So I'm going to read her bio for you and just cannot wait to dive in for this conversation. So two decades ago, Elaine Taylor Klaus described herself as an overwhelmed, anxious stay-at-home mom with three complex kids. A fierce advocate, she discovered there was plenty of support, quote unquote, out there for her kids, but virtually nothing in the way of support for her. As her own learning and attention challenges were diagnosed after 40, she realized that helping her family needed to start with her. She trained as a coach to provide support for parents like her. Now, 10 years later, Elaine is the co-founder and CEO of ImpactParents.com, the largest and most innovative online support resource for parents of complex kids in the world, serving parents on six continents and more than 100 countries. She is the author of two books, including the recent number one new release, The Essential Guide to Raising Complex Kids with ADHD, Anxiety, and More. A typical parenting book for kids who are not so typical. Impact Parents is a virtual platform that provides affordable and accessible support, training, and coaching to parents and professionals. Elaine, welcome. I just have to say that so Learning Essentials, our tagline is educate, experience, and empower. That's the main drive for our podcast, the Pro Tips Podcast, is educating and empowering parents and professionals. And I love that your new book is titled The Essential Guide and speaks to empowering teachers and parents. Welcome.
It's about empowering people, trusting that people actually will do best when they know what they need to do best. That people know what they need, that if people learn to trust themselves and trust their instincts, parents, educators, professionals, they're better suited to use this material to empower themselves and ultimately empower their kids than anything else. And that really comes from that world of coaching that looks at what's possible instead of what's broken.
And that is empowering within self. Look at what is possible so that you can move forward. So was there an aha moment when it clicked for developing Impact Parent and subsequently the Essential Guide to Raising Complex Kids? Was there an aha moment, or was it this kind of slow experience that brought you to this?
Well, you know, it's interesting. So I am a parent of complex kids, and I had gone back to school and I'd become a coach and I'd started my own business. And I knew that my mission in the world was to change the medical model. I wanted to change the way the medical community was interacting with parents of complex kids or kids with chronic medical conditions or kids with like all kinds of complex kids. Because what I realized was that looking at these kids as broken wasn't serving anyone. It wasn't helping the kids. It wasn't helping the parents. And that sort of old school medical model looks for the problem to fix. And these kids aren't a problem to fix. These kids are these amazing beings with capacity. And if we can look to what's possible for them, it changes everything. And when I was exposed to coaching, I thought I was actually going back to school to get a graduate degree. I had taken the GREs and everything. I was going to be a therapist to support parents. And then I discovered coaching. And I remember so vividly, I called my husband that afternoon in tears. And I said, I found it. This is it. I found what I'm supposed to do in the world. And coaching was this just incredibly empowering, positive, forward-thinking way of communicating that just really spoke to me.
And I appreciate that you talk about the chronic medical need and Power Up Learning Essentials. Power Up by Learning Essentials, we support kiddos with chronic medical conditions. And we often say that the medical community tends to be in a silo, paralleling the educational community. And really trying to break down those walls, to have a conversation, to support these kiddos in and out of the classroom so that they can become the best versions of themselves.
Right.
And really empowering the kids as well as the parents, as well as the whole team that surrounds the students, so that they can really develop the skills that they have. And it's such a gift. And it is exactly that. It's not trying to fix a problem. It's how do we enhance and grow and guide this kiddo so that they can really shine.
And yes, like to absolutely everything you said, I agree with that. And it's not just the silo between medical and school. It's silo within the medical community.
That's right. Exactly.
And so as a parent, we are called upon to be advocates and to make really complex medical decisions sometimes without really any training or information. And so coaching for the parent becomes a vehicle for decision making and a vehicle to guide them through the process of being that medical manager. Because I had a kid with some fragile medical needs, and there was nobody looking at the big picture but me.
Right.
And so coaching was what really shifted my ability to put the pieces together and make the connections. And it empowered me to be that advocate for my kid because I didn't understand most of what she was dealing with, but I had to learn to make decisions even without that knowledge.
And I think with, you know, knowledge is power. And so mm-hmm. having somebody guide you through the conversations to have really helps reduce your personal anxiety mm-hmm. so that you feel that you can really kind of look above the entire situation, you know, that macro view versus the micro view, and really kind of come to a team with questions and needed information. How would you define a complex child? Like, what does that child's behavior look like that makes them complex?
For me, a complex child is a kid who struggles with some aspect of life or learning, right? So a kid right. who is for some reason not hitting typical milestones. And sometimes it's in their personal life or their home life, and sometimes it's school, and sometimes it's both. And in my world, sometimes it's kids with neurological issues. So it may be anxiety or ADHD or learning disabilities, but it can also be medical issues. It can be kids with CP, or my kid had severe allergies, or whatever a child is struggling with that makes it more difficult for them to manage the fundamentals of their life. They're a complex kid. These days in the world of the pandemic, they're all complex kids because we got complex kids in complex times. And there's nothing we can expect that's kind of familiar to us. So a complex kid is a kid where they're not kind of following in the lines for whatever reason. And I'm not judging that as wrong. It's just as a parent, it's difficult to manage that because all the parenting gurus out there to tell you to do it this way. And when this way doesn't work, then you don't know what to do.
You don't know what to do. And you're right. And just trying to navigate those waters.
That's what I always say, is navigating the choppy waters of parenting. That's really what it's about.
And often it's choppy. And so, yep. You know, this is really kind of a two-part question. What is one of the greatest parenting and or teaching challenges for parents? And then I'm going to ask about the advice that kind of follows up with that, but just kind of, and I know it's probably a broader question because every kiddo is so individualized in their needs.
It's really clear. The answer is this: parents have a hard time letting go. And parenting is a daily exercise of letting go. And the hardest thing for a parent is to let go and transfer ownership when you have a kid who has a hard time taking ownership, right? Because you want for them, I was working with a group of, I've got a new group I've just started of parents of young adults, because we've got so many parents of young adults coming now over this COVID period. All these kids have moved back home and the parents are beginning to see the cracks in the foundation. And so I had a mom who was saying, the problem isn't that I'm holding control too much. The problem is that she won't take control. And there's a lot of reasons a child may be not yet taking control. And they may be afraid of failure. They may be afraid of success. It may be too ambiguous. There's a million reasons that could be causing it. But if that parent is really so busy holding the reins and holding the agenda, why should the kid bother? Why should I take on the agenda if you're just going to hold it for me? And more than likely, whatever I do, I'm not doing well enough anyway. So the hardest thing for a parent to do is to learn how to little by little, incrementally pass the baton, turn over the reins to transfer ownership to their kids. It's hard.
It's super hard. How do you guide them with that of letting go? And then conversely, how do you guide the young adults at any age? I mean, and you can even not necessarily young adults, just kids across the age range to start taking control and having that ownership and being able to advocate.
So we have a method that we teach that's very, very simple because everything's got to be super simple and usable. But the idea is it starts with taking aim. And taking aim is about getting very clear on the change you want to see. But as parents, we have a tendency to try to take aim on everything. And I was guilty. I was one of those parents that had a reward chart with 30 something line items on it, right? As if that was ever really going to work. And you get 2 points for this and you lose 3 points. I mean, there's a picture of it in the book. It's kind of funny. And we make things way too complicated. And the truth is that change happens in tiny little increments. I mean, look at the success of Noom in the last couple of years. Change happens in tiny, tiny little increments. So the process is to teach parents to take aim really, really specifically to work with their, it's a lot of it's about communication shift and how we talk to our kids, how we set expectations, how we hold a positive environment. There's a number of pieces that, you know, there's more detail, but at the bottom line, it's you take aim on the change you want to see. You get curious about what's going on. You really understand the dynamic before you start problem solving. Parents have a tendency to start with the solution. I need a structure for this. I need a system for this. And we love a good system or structure. But if we don't really understand what we're using it for, and if we haven't got our kids' buy-in and motivation to use it, it's not going to work. And then we're going to throw up our hands and get frustrated and say, well, that didn't work. And we're going to miss the opportunity to use something that could really work if we would just slow down and do it a little bit more thoughtfully, a little bit more carefully.
Yeah. And you know, I'm kind of, as you're talking, I'm relating that just my special education hat on in terms of developing IEPs for kiddos. In a sense, you know, you start with the parent input statement and then, you know, the impact and developing these goals and really changing in small increments and measuring those increments, but really kind of asking the why. Mm-hmm. Before you create that system.
Right. What's beneath it? What are you trying to achieve and what's leading to this situation in the first place? Because if you don't understand that your kid is behaving this way, not because he's rude or disrespectful, but because he's scared or because he's not processing the information, the solution, the system you're going to put in place is going to be different depending on the why.
That's right. And I think honestly, when you have a parent come and, you know, even again to an IEP table and say, this is what I want.
Right.
But then once you kind of come back and look under the hood and take that deeper dive and say, all right, well, this is what's happening. That could be the aim, the system that you need, but it could also look very differently depending on that kiddo. Once you really get under, you know, those roots.
Exactly. You have to know what's behind the behavior. Right.
That's right.
And what's the motivation for the new behavior that you want to see?
Exactly. I mean, those are definitely the words as well. And almost that functional behavioral analysis approach in terms of what is the why, what is underneath, you know, and you're right. I mean, kiddos are not waking up saying, I'm going to be a jerk today.
Right.
They're just not. They're nope. just not. And so they really have, you know, there's something that's whether they can express it or not, that's, you know, putting them in this place. And our jobs as coaches and educators and parents is to really help define that why so that we can create that positive system, that motivation for them.
One of the strategies we teach is don't get furious, get curious, right?
It's amazing.
When we have a tendency, and part of what I think we do really well at Impact and what the book does really well is we take a lot of these concepts that you're talking about from behavioral analysis, whatever, that are kind of textbooky and clinical and a little hard. Totally. And we translate them into human English.
I love that.
Right?
We all need that.
So it's very conversational. Like it will feel like we're sitting there having a conversation. And so don't get furious, get curious is when you notice yourself getting frustrated, getting annoyed, getting irritated, getting angry, that's the time to say, huh, what's going on here? Right? What's leading to this behavior? Because if you take the beat, there's always something leading to that behavior. And it's usually something that you could have some serious compassion for. It's usually, oh, they're struggling with that. Oh, I can help them with that, which is very different from how dare you talk to me that way.
And it really changes that relationship totally, and that dynamic.
Totally. So, you know, Diane used to say, Diane's my business partner. Diane used to say, it's not that he's disrespectful. It's that he's having a hard time being respectful right now. That shift, right? It's so, so huge. He's not being rude. He's not being lazy. He's having a hard time getting activated. Huge difference.
And a huge difference for people to then shift how they approach that child and that student.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Which then changes how that child approaches themselves. And ultimately, this is about empowering these kids to see what they're capable of instead of constantly seeing where they're falling short, which they get a lot of.
We talked a lot about this and we've mentioned the impact program. Can you explain the impact model? And you kind of talked about where this idea came from, but can you just explain that a little bit deeper?
Yeah. So the impact model is based on a classic coaching model. Like this is, so what we do at Impact actually is we teach parents essential coaching skills. We realized they made a difference in how we were communicating with our kids. So we kind of pulled together, and Diane and I came from two different coaching schools. So we have a more comprehensive experience with coaching. And so we pulled what works and what's the basic model. So it's a five-step model that starts with taking aim and then getting curious or getting educated. And then we stop before you get into planning and we kind of break it down. So we look in planning at a few different components. We look at activating the brain. And, you know, some parents use medication, some use meditation, some use exercise. It doesn't matter to me how you activate the brain. What matters is that you understand that what's challenging for this kid is either coming out of the brain or the metabolic system or both, right? So something is structurally happening that's making it hard for this kid to do whatever you're asking them to do. And so you have to understand that and look to that as your problem solving. And then of course we look at positivity because there's no good parenting paradigm that doesn't include it. The difference here is that positivity is not enough with complex kids. It's essential, but it's incomplete, right? So positivity, you got to have that component, but it's not enough to just love your kid. You're not going to love your kid to learn how to manage their executive function challenges, you know, like any more than that. Yeah. So then we look at setting realistic expectations or shifting expectations. And that's not lowering them, but it's meeting these kids where they are developmentally. We want to let go of this notion that chronologically they're 9 or they're 12 or they're 16, so they should be doing something. And we want to say, okay, developmentally, where is this kid in relation to this challenge or this issue? And meet them where they are and then raise the bar from there appropriately so that we're really empowering them to get some success under their belt. Success breeds more success. So if you help a kid find something, see what they're capable of, they're going to be willing to try and stretch a little bit more. And so once we look at all of that, then we start putting a system in structure or structure in place. And then after we take action, then we go back and we rinse and repeat. We look back at it and we say, okay, what worked? What I call it the magic three questions. What worked? What didn't work? What do you want to do differently? Right? We always want to be not trying to get it right, but what we call is failing forward. We want to make sure that we learn from the experience, tweak it, massage it, and then try it again before we just give it up because it didn't work. We set the expectation that it's probably not going to work right the first time, and that's okay. And then the whole model is circled in self-care. Because the most important thing for parents is to take care of ourselves. And we often say, if you don't know where to start and you don't know where to take aim, and sometimes we'll have parents come to a group call and say, I don't know what to take aim on this week. You got two choices. You either take care of yourself and focus on something for self-care, or you lean into relationship. Because at the end of the day, it's that relationship with your kid that builds the trust that has them open and receptive to learning.
Beautiful.
So that kind of encapsulates the whole thing. And so it's simple, but it's got lots of depth and legs and nuance to play with. And at the bottom line, it's take aim, get educated, take some time before you plan, take action, and rinse and repeat.
And it's empowering itself, just that rinse and repeat mm-hmm. portion. And as a parent, as an educator, knowing and providing that platform that we're not going to get it right. But what a great strong message to teach, not going to get it right the first time.
Right.
And that we're going to tweak it and we're going to move forward. We may move back a little bit, but just as long as that trajectory of growth is in that positive position. And I think just even to model that for our kiddos is a lifelong skill that hopefully they will integrate as they're moving forward, knowing that it's not going to be 100% all of the time. Because what type of pressure does that put on a kid to say, I've got to get this right all the time? That's just,
right.
It's not realistic. And then you're setting them up for failure. And then that's a cycle that's rinse and repeat that we don't want.
Exactly. Well, you know, it's interesting. We talk, so we have a program called Sanity School for Parents.
Oh my goodness. That was my next question.
Right.
So I love it.
Sanity
yes.
School for Parents is their basic behavior therapy training program or behavior management program, whatever you want to call it. But one of the things we talk about is making it okay to make mistakes and creating an environment in your home, the tone of the home that makes it okay to make mistakes. But the other thing that kind of links to that, and that's kind of what we're referencing in the rinse and repeat, but what links to that is how important it is to teach kids to ask for help and to be okay with asking for and accepting help. And what I see, particularly when I'm working with, now that I've got more young adult parents of young adults in my world, the biggest mistake parents make, and I will call it a mistake, is not modeling for kids what it looks like to ask for help. So they create this environment that says, I can do this on my own. I should know how to do this. And then they wonder when their kids say, I can do this on my own. I should know how to do this. When the truth is, when the parents start saying, I don't know how to do this, I'm going to ask for some help, and models that and is transparent with their kid, then the kid's like, oh, maybe it's okay to get some help. Maybe I will take that executive function tutor you were talking about, right? But if you just give it to them because you know they need it and they haven't learned that asking for help is safe and okay, then you set everybody up for failure.
Right. And that's why we even say, you know, talk out loud and, you know,
yes.
Just even tips along the line, just kind of talk out loud, even if it's just cooking dinner, like, oh, you know, oh, I didn't put that in. I wonder what will happen. Just having
yes.
these like, you know, even though it's,
the coaching yes. term for it is being transparent. Okay.
Yes.
1,000%.
Being transparent, because even, you know, just even with kiddos that you're working with in a classroom or just your own personal kids, just having those conversations provides that permission.
And to do it without beating yourself up. Right. And so
that's right.
When you make the wrong turn or you miss the light or whatever it is, not to say, I'm such an idiot, or you lost your glasses, I'm such, but to actually say, oh, I lost my glasses, without making yourself wrong for it.
Yes.
You know, I don't know where I put my keys. Okay. Can anybody help me find my keys? You know, without that tendency, I often say that adults, particularly in my world, a lot of the adults that come to me have similar issues to their kids. And so they've spent a lifetime of hitting themselves over the head with a stick, right? Beating themselves up for not being perfect. So sometimes, often, one of my first assignments for an adult, if I see that pattern, is to go outside and find a stick and bring it inside and put it on their desk or their kitchen counter or whatever, just to remind themselves to stop beating themselves up, you know, because we do that. And then our kids see that and then they beat themselves up. They're watching. They're like the paparazzi.
They watch. Isn't that right?
They see everything we do.
They do. And what a great visual to give parents to kind of remind them. As you're saying that, it reminds me of the old cartoons with the frying pan
right.
as well. But yeah. So who is the ideal client for Sanity School?
Any parent of a kid, probably 3 or 4 and up into adults. Like we used to say 4 to 24. Now it's 3 to 33. Really, any parent who feels like they want to do a better job of parenting their kid, whether their kid's complex or not. I am seeing some adults using it to parent themselves, which is unbelievably gratifying. So I've had
Absolutely.
Some friends who've read it as adults who don't have kids are like, okay, this is really helpful. Because the secret is, it's actually really a coaching book. It's about self-coaching. And it's very sort of uplifting and conversational. So it's really for any parent who wants to have a better relationship with their kid and wants to improve their communication patterns with their kids.
Does the program, does Sanity Training provide suggestions or resources to assist with online learning?
Yeah. It hasn't been adapted to online learning, although when we redeliver it in the spring, it will have a little, it'll have some additional pieces to it. But most of it, again, it's about framework and foundation and communication and how do you transfer ownership. So it doesn't really matter what the challenge is that the parent or the child is facing. What matters is how do you problem solve around it. And so it's a method for problem solving, for it's a collaborative problem solving methodology. Right.
Which really transcends anything, you know, COVID, virtual learning, online schooling, you know, the whole gamut, you know, during these unusual times, it really is just that toolbox that's going to be applicable.
It's a really comprehensive toolbox. And it's interesting because we did some research last summer with parents to kind of get a sense of why aren't parents getting the help they need when we know it's available now. It didn't used to be available, but now it is. Why aren't they getting it? And we learned lots about, you know, parents not believing that they, you know, helping themselves is valuable and they need to put it in their kids and all this. But one of the things we learned in this research is that parents were looking for specific answers to specific problems and were having a hard time extrapolating and saying, well, how can this apply to me? Because I need help with this. My kid won't turn in this. My kid's struggling is talking back to me. And this notion that something general is going to apply to their specific circumstance was something that was concerning. And the truth is that because it's about problem solving, it's about teaching you a way to manage anything that comes up. Like what I want for my parents is for them to have what I call a bring it on attitude, right? I want you to know, as a mom or dad, as a parent, as a whatever, as a guardian, I want you to know that whatever comes at you, you've got it, that you know what to do to handle it, that you have the confidence, that you have the skills, that you have the communication tools, like that you've got it. And so it doesn't matter what comes up or what the issue is, you're going to know how to problem solve around it. And that's who Sanity's for is, any Sanity School's for is anybody who wants to be able to have the toolbox to problem solve.
You know, and we've used parents a lot in this conversation, but I can definitely see where this can tremendously support our educators.
Oh, yeah.
General educators, special educators. Can you kind of talk about your experience with teachers and how, you know, I'm just...
Overwhelmed
with excitement for providing, being able for parents and teachers to be able to have, again, this toolbox in your book. You know, the readability of it is easy and it's in a language that everybody can understand, that it's not intimidating. Yeah. And that is incredibly important.
So a couple of years after we came out with Sanity School, we had some members, some who were teachers who had gone through Sanity School as parents and came back to us and said, this has completely transformed my classroom. And so we worked with some of them. One of them had been in a training program because we train local professionals to deliver Sanity School. And so we worked with some of them and created Sanity School for Teachers. So we actually have a training, we have Sanity School for Parents and Sanity School for Teachers. So we have a teacher's version. They're very, very similar, but the stories are different, right? The application is different. And we've had, like, there's an article on our site about how Sanity School, one teacher read how Sanity School helped her become Teacher of the Year.
Oh my gosh.
Because it completely transforms the classroom when you begin to see these kids differently. You know, and we've had teachers who've called, you know, in tears and saying, I wish I had understood this before and I was being so unfair to these kids. Or, and sometimes these are special ed teachers and sometimes they're general ed. Sometimes they call and they say, I can't believe I used to say those kinds of things to the parents. I feel so bad, you know, so we got to get them through that and
that's right,
overcome that. And so there's a lot of support. It's a 6-class training, but then it comes with 3 months of support so they can really learn it and work through it and get feedback and be in a community. But yeah, we have, like, you know, well, sometimes a school will call and put 10 people or 20 people through it. And, you know, obviously we do discount rates and all that for teachers, but we've done a lot of teacher training the last couple of years. You know, Montessori school, like their entire international, we taught all of the school administrators at the International Montessori Conference, because it's just so applicable to everybody, because it's really just basically good communication skills at the end of the day, that's what we teach.
And forming a community, like you said, but I mean, a community in the sense that through Impact and Sanity School, you're developing this community and relationship mm-hmm. with folks, but then also as educators, so that they can develop a community within their classroom
yes.
of conversation and to be able to support these kiddos, which not only improves the academics, but also that social emotional component as well.
It's so, and a lot of this is about social and emotional development. A lot of this is about emotional IQ, if you will, is really leaning into. I'm thinking about one teacher who the story that she shared with me was that she had a very complex kid in the classroom. I think it was like fourth grade, and was really struggling with this kid. And as she started doing the program, she started talking to the kid differently. And she told me about this one day where the whole classroom was working, and what she used the program to do was to help her get everyone in the classroom to the point where they could work on what they were able to work on, so that everybody was able to meet their own need, not trying to meet some central goal.
Which is a life skill.
Exactly. And so she had one kid who she finally, the kid was just not, wasn't able to get started. And so she had her conversation with her and she realized the kid was worried about a dental appointment. Mm-hmm. And it was that yeah. simple. And she just needed to say that she was worried because she had to go to the dentist and she was nervous. And so they kind of shifted expectations for what she was going to work on that day because she really wasn't able to do what was being asked at the time because she had to go to the dentist after school and she was scared. I mean, it was that simple. Right. And that seems so obvious, but you have to know to pause, to stop, to listen for it and find the way to discover it.
My head's exploding.
Isn't it great?
It's all fabulous. It is. And how that moment in time that you had an adult pause
yeah.
to hear your feelings, to see where you were and realize that your cognitive availability for this moment in time is not going to meet the demands that are right there.
Exactly.
But that doesn't mean that they don't want to, they can't. It's just, they need a pause. They need to be able to unpack this and kind of get it off. And sometimes I've even said to students that I work with and even my own personal children, are you telling me this or do you need help with it?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. What do you need from me right now? Do you need me to listen? Do you need one of my kids yeah. taught me this wonderful tool. Are you ready? It's called Poor Baby.
Okay.
My kid was a teenager and they came home from school and they were, you know, and I was probably fixing too much or problem solving. And they looked at me and they said, "Mom, I just need a poor baby right now."
That's right.
Oh, I can do that.
Yeah.
I just need a poor baby. And so now I'll ask the kids, okay, what do you need right now? Is this a poor baby moment? You need problem solving? Do you need a coach? Do you need a parent? Like, what do you need? Because they'll tell you if you give them the chance to do it.
That's right. Because I felt like I was just trying to jump in and automatically solve something.
Right.
My brain's going, you're telling me information, you need help. But then no. And honestly, 9 times out of 10, it's a poor baby. Or I just wanted to tell you.
Right.
I just needed to like put it out to the universe that this was happening. And now I feel better. So we can move on.
And this continues as they get older, right? And so the sooner you start it, the younger the kids are, the more collaborative you are, the sooner they are, the more you give them choice. So, and here's the other thing I'll say is complex kids are desperate for control because there is something key in their life that's out of control.
Yeah.
And we have this tendency to respond to it by over-controlling when what they need more than anything is for us to scaffold and support and to really keep giving the control back to them in whatever way we can. And it may not be relevant to the task at the moment, but however we can help them feel a sense of control. And we can start that really young. I mean, think about this. When you knock on a kid's door and you wait before you open it and they say, "Come in," you're giving them control. They're getting to decide if you come in the room or not. They're giving you permission. And that's giving them a sense of ownership and control. And you can start that really young, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's powerful. And then as they get older, that may change to, may I make a suggestion? I have a thought about that. Would you like to hear it? Like asking them before you dive into telling them. It's unbelievably empowering for them when you do that.
And they may say yes. And I think also the converse is
they may say no.
And they may say no. And how do parents and educators absorb that,
right,
and react to that?
Well, when they say no, if you're building your relationship with them and you're building the trust, they're going to come back and say yes when they're ready. If you don't push it and force it, But if they say no and then you force it, you've lost trust. And trust is fundamental to absolutely everything because, you know, the brain research is really clear. When kids feel trust, it releases oxytocin, the happy hormones. When they feel fear, it releases cortisol, the stress hormones. It's kind of, this is science, y'all. Like we believe science really exists. And it's really simple. So the more we can create a trusting environment, the more open to and receptive to learning kids will be able to be.
Do you find that some strategies are more successful depending on the age, the group, the gender?
Yes, to some extent. I think, you know,
maybe it's the approach.
The context is the same for all, right? But then there are certain strategies, like when Diane and I are addressing a different audience, like she's doing a workshop right now or a series of group coaching on taming the triggers, managing meltdowns, right? I'm working with young adults. So we're not teaching the same skills right now. But the context for them, the model, the methodology, all that's the same. But right now she's going to be talking more about trigger management and I'm going to be teaching designing relationships and a strategy called ACE, which is a great communication tool that's particularly great with teenagers and older adults. I'll be talking about motivation and an acronym we teach called PENCH. So we teach different, narrower strategies depending on the topic, but they all come in the context of the impact model.
The umbrella of that.
Mm-hmm.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, how important is coaching for parents, teachers when raising and educating children, students with ADHD and other complex challenges?
From my perspective, it's a 10.
100%.
But here's what I would say is that, I mean, some parents are naturally, you know, sort of conscientious, intuitive. They understand they're not, you know, there are some parents for whom they don't, quote, need coaching. Maybe they don't need it, but they would still really like it because those conscious parents are the ones who want it because they want to be better and better. What we learned after doing this for a number of years, in addition to coaching, we added training. I mean, we'd been doing training all along, but what we were realizing was that there was a certain foundational training that our coaching clients really needed to make the most of their coaching. So now we do it a little bit more as an ascension. We start everybody off in some variation of Sanity School or something so they can get the basic framework and understand it. For some parents, all they need is that training and we never see them again. You know, they read our stuff and they stay in our community, but the training is what they needed and they can apply it. Many, many parents, once you learn it, it's now what do I do with this information? How do I apply it? Implementation is really important. And where coaching is so useful is helping parents apply it in that moment when the pot's boiling over and it's 5 o'clock and someone's screaming and right. What do I do now? And coaching really does allow parents and teachers to apply it at the moment, at that point of performance, at the point of chaos. And that's where I think the shift comes in because it happens kind of over time. It's not a one time. It's not information. It's transformation.
That's right. Yeah. And having those opportunities to apply what they've learned, kind of back to that rinse and repeat that you were talking about earlier, to apply it in little baby steps and then come back and say, listen, I tried it and this worked and to evaluate it again.
Yeah. And here's what I will say. One other thing I'll say on that is that we really know how busy parents are and how tapped out and strapped parents are and teachers are. And so it's for us, it's all about, and it's got to work for the parent and it's got to work. Like it's got to be usable. So it's got to be effective and it's got to be efficient. It's got to be affordable. It's got to be accessible, right? It to make it work for the parent, you cannot have a $500 medical appointment that you have to drive 2 hours. Like it's got to be really efficient, really affordable, really accessible. And that's a big part of what we've created is a way to make it, let parents use it from wherever they are when they need it.
What's the most common misconception that parents and educators have when working with children diagnosed with ADHD and other complex issues?
Probably the most common misconception is that the kids are being naughty when it's really neurological or metabolic, right? We teach parents to ask, okay, is this naughty or neurological, right? And sometimes depending on the audience, is this naughty or metabolic? You know, you got a kid whose blood sugar's dropped. That's what's going on right now.
the language that you teach folks.
Yeah. One of my gifts, and you know, we all have our gifts in life, and one of mine is the ability to translate fairly complex medical information into understandable, simple English. It's just, you know, we all have our gifts. That one's one of mine.
That's a huge gift.
And to make it accessible. I have one doctor I used to work with a lot where I would like follow him around and translate for him. We would do, you know, be conferences together and he'd say something and say, okay, hang on a minute. So what Dr. Parker is saying is, you know, I think we've translated a lot of it's not rocket science. We didn't make this stuff up. Right. We've just organized it really well and translated in a way that people can go, oh, I understand.
And make it accessible. And made it accessible. What advice can you give to a first year teacher dealing with students who have varying levels of ADHD or a variety of needs?
Lots of answers to that. Here's what comes up first is get a better understanding of executive function. Really, really understand. And like we have an executive function chart that we include in Sandy School where you can go student by student and figure out where their strengths are and where their challenges are. And it breaks it down really. There are kind of six key areas. And then you want to look at the nuance. So what's the behavior and what's underlying the behavior? What's the developmental piece that hasn't yet developed enough for that kid to achieve what you're asking them to achieve? It's the most essential thing to help you set realistic expectations is to understand the underlying executive function challenges that a kid has. And if you can't do it kid by kid, that's a lot, just understanding executive function on the next level. You know, we wrote an ebook called What the Heck is Executive Function and Why Should I Care? It's one of the first things we wrote because I realized for years I was hearing the term bandied around and I really thought that it was a term that the medical community used to make us parents feel like idiots. Like, because I just didn't know what it was. I didn't understand it. Nobody had ever explained it to me. They just used it in conversation as if I was supposed to know what they were talking about. And so again, we kind of simplified it and made it really, really clear. And we have something called an executive function bundle, like just, you know, understanding executive function at that next level can do more to transform your classroom than almost anything.
Absolutely. Because I think, especially as a first year teacher, you have a lot going on.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot happening. And you know, as educators and parents alike, you know, you grow and learn over time. But truly by understanding that umbrella of executive function, how it can impact the age range that you're working with and beyond. So you have this, again, that little picture, big picture idea of my classroom versus where I'm growing our kiddos to go. And then that really helps your best practice, which then in turn is going to help that behavior management, which in turn is going to support the needs of all the kiddos in the classroom, and then really then creates and fosters this excellent learning experience.
The other thing I would say is to a first year teacher is put the stick down, right? Yes. Take care of yourself, practice as much self-care as you can. Give yourself some time. There's a learning curve and it's going to take you a while to learn it. And you're not going to get it right the first time. You know, it's going to be a rocky year. It's kind of like that first year of marriage. It's going to be a little rocky, you know, and stay the course, you know, we talk, Wendy, about the marathon view. So take a marathon view.
Yes.
You're in this for the long haul. Right. You got to keep your hydration going. You got to keep the food going.
The nourishment, the whole thing.
I'm not a marathon runner. So that's about the extent of my metaphor. But you have to prepare yourself for the long haul and stay focused on the steps in front of you. Right. You cannot worry about what's going to happen six years down the line. You have to be right here, right now. Presence is probably your best tool as a teacher, especially in the early years.
Is there a secret weapon or a foolproof strategy that helps, that you've seen has helped every teacher, benefits every child?
Yeah, actually there is. We teach a strategy called ACE. I mentioned it a little while ago. And A stands for acknowledgement plus compassion, and then you explain or explore or whatever. And it diffuses defensiveness and connects with the kid. So acknowledgement is, I can see you're really frustrated by this right now, or it feels like this is overwhelming, or you're not sure you can do it, or whatever. Or it looks like you did a great job, like checking off, you did almost all of your stuff this week, right? Acknowledge where they are. And then compassion is, might be, you know, and I hate it when I feel that way, or I bet it's really frustrating when you feel that way, or you did all this and I bet it's really annoying that there's still stuff left and you've done all this work, right? Whatever, meet them where they are emotionally. So acknowledgement and then compassion. And then you can explore your options, or, you know, what do you say we try this? Or you can explain, and I'd like you to really go back and look at this. You can get all sorts of direction in there in that E, in that explain or explore, if you start by acknowledgement and compassion. I had a teacher for one of my kids, my youngest son, who I tried really hard to teach her this, because this was one of those classrooms where they would give them all the information at the beginning of the week. This is what you have to do. And then they would check in at the end of the week and, you know, what have you done? What have you not done? And I had a kid who just needed her to say, good job that you did all these things, before she said, and these things are still, but instead she would start off by saying, well, you haven't done this and you haven't done this. And it shut him down completely. And it's not that he wasn't even willing to do it, but he just needed the attaboy first.
Who doesn't?
Right. And it is that simple. So ACE is the most universal strategy of all. Any age, any kid, any parent, any teacher, acknowledge with compassion before you go into explain or explore.
How have you seen kids or students describe the difference they've noticed when the adults in their lives complete this training? Have you kind of had any anecdotal feedback?
Oh, we've got, you know, oodles and oodles of testimonials. And so are you asking about the kids or the parents?
I'm asking about the kids, okay, if they've noticed, right, but they may be young and, you know, I don't know. So I just thought, can the kids notice,
oh, yeah,
or are they able to articulate?
The kids, I have one client I've been working with for a couple of years, and her kid will say, not only, mom, you need to go talk to Elaine, but she will, like, yeah, no, the relationship improves. That's what it is. The relationship improves so much. Like, one of my favorite stories in my personal life was a couple of summers ago. And by this point, my kids were, one was in her 20s, one was in their 20s, one was, you know, late teens, and one was mid-teens. And they came to us, and my husband's also a coach. And they came to us one summer, independently of each other, and all of them came to each of us and said, thank you.
Oh, my heartstrings.
I mean, like, right? No better music to your ears, because they were beginning to see how this coach approach that we had raised them in was changing their relationships and their dynamics, or how their family got along in a way their friends' families didn't, or how they were able to navigate a conversation that their friends couldn't. Like, they saw what it gave them. And that's what I hear from parents. It's like they're laughing again as a family. Their kids are telling them things, talking to them, sometimes more than they want to hear. You know,
it's okay.
That's right. It's okay. But so I think that the real shift is you begin to reclaim your relationship with your kids. It's amazing.
I've got goosebumps.
It's amazing.
I've got goosebumps, Elaine.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's what everybody wants. So if you could turn back the time and talk to your, you know, 20-year-old self, what would you tell them?
Oh, well, so my 20-year-old self was undiagnosed. And I wasn't diagnosed until after all of my kids had been, or at least two out of three, and I was 40-something years old. So I would tell my former self, actually, you're not an idiot. You're not stupid. When everybody tells you you're smart and you feel like you're stupid because you can't remember stuff, that's actually because of the way your brain is wired. And so for me, I would go back to understanding the underlying issues. When I was diagnosed at 40, my entire life made sense. It was like light bulb after light bulb, I figured out why I went to the school I went to, why I studied what I studied, why I didn't study what I really wanted to study, because I could write, but I couldn't take tests because I have really difficult memory issues related to my ADD. And so had I known, I could have gone back and got tutors, and I could have, like, had I understood, but instead I was just so busy trying to not let the world know I was really stupid when they kept telling me I was smart. When I was diagnosed, I picked up the phone, I called my mom, and I said, "Mom, guess what we've got?" So
what was her response?
She laughed. You know, it took years for her to figure out that maybe I was onto something. The reason I do what I do, the reason I started doing what I do, is because I didn't want other parents to go through what I went through those first 10 years, where I was lost and isolated and overwhelmed and freaked out and neurotic as hell. And I want...
What a terrible place to be.
Yeah, it's certain.
But she's a new mom.
You can't parent from inspiration when you feel desperate. You just can't. So, and parenting from inspiration is really the only healthy, fabulous, wonderful way to parent. And you can get there when you're feeling desperate. It's just, you need a little help. So I didn't want parents to felt what I felt. And then after I started doing it, I realized... And I don't want kids to feel like I felt. I don't want kids to feel like my kids felt like those first 10 years, or that my husband felt when he was a kid, or my brother. Like, I just, if we can take away the stigma and the shame and make it matter of fact, if we can call it what it is, whatever it is, right? If we can say, oh, this is how your brain is wired. This is how your body is created. This is your issue. This is your challenge. Without any judgment around it, if we can just make it matter of fact, then we can allow people to go, oh, that's something I have to learn to manage. I'm going to be distracted if I don't put some systems in place to manage that. I'm going to stay up all night because I love staying up all night unless I say to myself, no, I really want to go to bed by 11 or 12. Like, it's not rocket science, but it takes consciousness and attention to manage these issues. And you can't do it if you're busy denying that it exists.
Right. You can't do it alone and as well, right? Right. And to have a gift as yourself and what you offer to guide you to that process is just priceless. It really is. Was there something that I didn't know enough to ask today?
Yeah, during our conversation? You asked some amazing questions. I thought this was great. I mean, I think that the thing I want to leave people with is to remember that you can do this. Like, you've got this, right? This is about listening to your inner voice, not those saboteur voices, but your inner sage, right? It's trusting your instincts, having compassion and curiosity, and connecting to what's important to you. That will guide you better in parenting and educating than anything else you can do. And asking for the help and the guidance to be able to help you tune into yourself is really the greatest gift you can give to everyone.
What a fabulous way to end this. And I always ask the question, you've certainly just went ahead and answered it. And I always say, if you could have a billboard with one tip for a parent, what would it be and why? And I think you just gave us that answer.
But you've got this.
For sure. You've got this.
And no one knows better than you how to be the parent you want to
be. That's right. I mean, Elaine, I could talk to you for so much more. I hope that this conversation empowers parents, educates parents and educators alike, professionals supporting our kiddos to give them a direction. I will share your information in our show notes so people know how to get a hold of you, and encourage and everybody to go out and get your book to give them that toolbox to help make things a little easier in their day.
Thank you
so much.
You're so welcome. It was a lovely conversation. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for joining us today for our IEP Essentials Pro Tips podcast. To hear more pro tips and find additional IEP essentials, including our IEP webinar, please visit www.learningessentialsedu.com.